Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 377, Outsourcing Financial Management Services for Architecture Firms, with Yotam Kadam. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors. ARCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and more, all for free. And Sweet Process, focus on the work that matters. Document process, procedures, and tasks all in one place so you can stay focused on growing your business. Yotam Kadam, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mark. Happy to be here.
It's great having you here. This is going to be an interesting conversation. And I think that by the time we're done, I think many, many of our listeners might have a mindset shift about some of the things that we talk about here today. Let me introduce you. Yotam is a partner and the head of the Precise office in New York City. The Precise International is an international firm with more than 200 analysts that specialize in financial management services for architectural and engineering firms here in the United States, with offices in New York and Boston and Chicago, as well as Israel and England and Greece. The firm has more than 20 years of experience working with A&E firms, and today works with more than 400 A&E firms. That's 400 A&E firms around the world. Yotam opened the office in New York back in 2011, and today he works with over 45 A&E firms in New York City with great success. So when I met Yotam and we started talking, just so we just wanted to connect and meet one another, we started talking about firm success, right? And how do firms grow and how do firms succeed? And so I had to have him on this conversation and share some of the knowledge that Yotam has with our community. So, but before we get into that, before we get into that conversation, Yotam, I'd love to share your origin story. How did this all start for you? Share your story from where you discovered your passion for what you're doing today to where you find yourself at this moment.
Sure. So, my story, kind of personal story, had kind of a lot of twists and turns. I was born in Israel. I kind of grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, moved back to Israel. At a certain point, I was getting my BA degree in Israel. And my last year in college, I basically, my friend introduced me to Precise. It was back then, it was probably 20, maybe 25 people working for the firm. And they basically said, okay, you know, if even if you're a student and you can just come in part-time, you can do this. And it was a great, you know, experience. It felt like you're doing it as a student, you're doing something that matters. And so I, you know, I looked into it, I interviewed it, did the whole process, and I started working there at, you know, my last year. I kind of really connected to Precise, connected to the model, connecting to the fact that we're, you know, without, you know, being too dramatic, changing people's lives or changing yeah. their lives. Again, we're not that dramatic, but we really, you know, you feel the shift, you feel the change. And as a young student, it meant a lot, right? Because you're, you know, used to do kind of internships and stuff like that. And it was really something that that stood out.
Before we get too deep into this episode, let's say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, RCAT, and Sweet Process. I'm hearing it more and more among our Entree Architect community. The workload is piling up. With project conditions changing and limited time to get things done, it's good to have information at your fingertips. RCAT.com provides architects, engineers, spec writers, and contractors with the most comprehensive libraries of building product content. And it's designed so you can access it quickly and efficiently. Even better, RCAT.com is free. It's free to use and requires no registration, no credit card, no email. So visit today at RCAT.com and access the information you need now. That's RCAT.com, A-R-C-A-T.com. Let me ask you a question. Are you frustrated with how long it takes to get things done in your architecture firm? Or how chaotic and confusing things seem to get? Well, let me tell you about a much better way of getting work done. Let me tell you about a new tool that will help you overcome the frustrating logjam in your architecture firm. It's called Sweet Process. Sweet Process is a simple yet powerful tool that lets you create clear step-by-step instructions for every task in your architecture firm, from writing proposals to executing client work to responding to client requests, so everything gets done more easily and more reliably. Plus, you'll have a central place where everyone who works for you, your employees, your contractors, or even your virtual assistants, they can access your procedures anytime from any device. The best way to understand how Sweet Process streamlines your work is to start using it. The company offers 14-day free trials. But as listeners to this podcast, the Entree Architect community, you can try Sweet Process for 28 days free of charge. You don't even have to enter a credit card to get started. Just visit sweetprocess.com/entrearchitect to start your free 28-day trial today. That's sweetprocess.com/entrearchitect, and let them know that you heard about them at the Entree Architect podcast. sweetprocess.com/entrearchitect. Please visit RCAT and Sweet Process today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. And that was in Israel?
That was in Israel, yes. So
and it was already focused on A&E at that time.
It was back then. It was solely focused on A&E firms. Okay. Again, the company was I think opened in 1996. So we're talking about, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years. We're still in the initial growth of the company, but it was really focused on that. The knowledge was already there, but obviously we made some huge changes and new shifts and came a long way since then. But you already felt like you made a difference. And I was working there then I finished my degree. I became full time, got on another client, started really working, you know, with more than one firm. Really felt like that I'm making a difference. About 2 years later, 2-3 years later, I kind of on a personal crossroads. I decided I was going to go back to the U.S. Basically, you know, initially we're going to go back to Boston because my family still lived there. And you know, the partners in Precise. I mean, I'm now part of it, but back then I wasn't. Obviously, said, you know what, if you're moving, let's give this a try and let's try to open, go international. At that time, we thought, the Israeli market was, limited. We knew we were wrong. Now we know we were wrong because, we grew substantially. But, we decided to open the firm and we opened the U.S. firm. And then I basically came here, came to New York, started working with one client at the beginning.
Was the expansion to New York your idea, or was it the partner's idea, or was it just sort of I'm moving?
So specifically to New York, I mean, we knew obviously the market here was a little bit bigger. We had some kind of connection, some kind of referrals that we knew. So basically, we said, okay, we're gonna kind of merge those together. And we said, let's give it a try. I mean, we didn't know if the services, if the things that happened in the U.S., there was no U.K. precise back then, or Greece, or anything like that. So we didn't know if it could transform like internationally. We thought it could, but we just didn't know the market. So we started, and I mean, very fast, we already kind of realized that it's very similar. I mean, architects and engineers, and I said it's like, and with a good twist, right? Are very similar every place they are, right? I mean, facing the same challenges. The character or the inspirations are pretty similar at all of these places. And basically, I started. I was the first precise analyst. I was an analyst. I was a manager. I was basically doing everything. And then we slowly started growing the company to where today we have about 20 analysts now, that work with me. We have managers that are managing those analysts as well, and we're working with about 45 firms. And we just started to grow. And obviously, we had our methodology of how to run this, how to do. We knew how to kind of run the firm. We were all, in the beginning, we were kind of lacking some of the industry knowledge, kind of how things are happening here, specifically to agencies, to pricing, all of that stuff. And that really what we picked up in the last, I guess, almost 10 years, and we became kind of stronger and stronger. I always felt our tools were very strong, but I think the fact we had also now the knowledge was really appealing to a lot of firms. We are service oriented, so we have to grow slowly. I mean, even though it sounds like a lot, 30, 40%, that's what we're growing about every year. We can do it faster, but we can't from a service point of view. We're very, minded on the service, and we don't just bring people off the street, put them in an office and say goodbye. We have kind of the managers very involved. I'm staying involved with all of our clients. And really that's kind of how we learn. We also learn, we have, we meet together, pass information, not pricing information, but, problems that you're facing. Things like, I have an issue with, an architectural firm, somebody wants a discount, somebody doesn't want to pay for some construction. Like, what do you do? It really helps us kind of move things forward. We learn things every day, but a lot of the challenges that we see in, from the smallest firms to the biggest firms, a lot of them we see at other places. So it's hard for us. It's easy for us to say, okay, this is, what we see in other places. This is what can work. And this is what can really be helpful. I mean, for me personally, obviously it's a huge journey. I mean, I came in as really kind of an analyst. I had a great opportunity. I didn't know how it's going to translate. And I'm kind of very happy to where we are now. And also very happy. Again, I still wake up every day in the morning. I'm happy about, the changes we're making. Even in days like this, right? I mean, during COVID, we stayed very involved. We were meeting our clients literally every week, sometimes, twice a week, just because there were so many challenges, so many issues that we had to face. I think we feel the satisfaction really, really helps. And that's basically kind of my story. It's not a regular standard story, but and again, obviously, the success of the company is not all on me. We had analysts that started 5-6 years ago, and now our managers that are really kind of taking a step forward and really managing the services. Analysts that work very hard and care about their clients and really do all of that. So we're really like, it's a team effort here. We are very close knit family and precise. And we really, the people that work for us, the people that care, I think that's something very key with our architecture firm. You need to care about, you know, about that business, especially the business side, because, you know, sometimes or many times, you know, the owners, they have different priorities, which is not a bad thing, right? People didn't go to school, right, to be, you know, to be to open a business, right? They went because they love what they do. And I really believe in that, that if you're an architect and you love what you do, and you're good at what you do, obviously, I think you're going to be successful. I think the mindset that you have to be a business person to be successful, I don't 100% agree with that. I mean, you need to know the business aspect. You need to know what's important. You sometimes need to outsource it, obviously. But, you know, if your product, if your service is strong, eventually you're going to make it. And you need to work on your craft more than anything. And I think sometimes we start working with firms, obviously the smaller side, they're a little bit confused because they think, okay, I know what to design, but that's not my issue. My issue is, how do I do the business aspect? You know, that's what's holding me back. And I'm like, you know, you focus on your design, you focus on your product, you focus on the service. At the end, this is a service. You know, it's there's a product, which is the design, but you're dealing with clients, and the service component is as important, if not even more, than the actual product at the end, especially for younger firms. You focus on that. I really believe you'll be successful. It sometimes means growth. Sometimes it means, you know, maybe staying where you are, just being successful. You don't have to grow up to be successful. But, you know, I really think, you know, focus on the design, focus on the service, focus on what makes you happy, what you're good at. And don't get too much in the, you know, worry too much about, you know, I'm a bad business person. Most architects, I hate to say, they're not a bad business person, but it's just not the strength, right? I mean, that's part of the reason our model works. The other reason it works, or the other reason we're focusing on A&E, is because it's a very difficult business to run. You know, it's not, you don't, sometimes you get paid hourly, most of the time you don't have inventory. You know, the models of running this business are not as straightforward, and you need to be very mindful of everything you're doing. So it's just tough to run. So don't kind of beat yourself up saying, I'm bad at business, because I really think at the end, if you're good at design, it's going to work itself out, and you're going to be successful.
Who are the architects that work with you? Do you work mostly with larger firms, or are you working with firms of all sizes?
So our services really, I think our smallest firms is maybe 2-3 employees. Our biggest, you know, firms are like, I don't know, 150, 160. Is there a sweet spot? I mean, I will say the concentration is probably between, 10 to 25, I would say. Is that the place we bring the most value? Probably not. I mean, I think it really depends on the firm, and we can bring different value to different sizes. A lot of our growth is really organic, because we don't really focus too much on marketing. So our clients are the ones that are really referring us to other clients. I'll just kind of how I would refer to you. I mean, that's really kind of how it works. So it could be a specific year that we worked with a few firms that were, I don't know, 10 people, and their friends also are 10 people. So all of a sudden we have more firms that are 10 people. Sometimes we have bigger firms. So it's, obviously it changes every year. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. When you're good at what you do, people who you've helped tend to want to share that knowledge with their friends, right? They want their friends to have that same experience.
Yeah, hopefully it's been working out like that. And again, we're trying our best that everybody are happy and successful, right? I mean, it's sometimes not the same thing, right? Sometimes you can be successful but not happy at what you do. Sometimes you're happy even though you're not really successful. So we're trying to kind of make those both. And successful, you know, it's obviously it's a vague term, but I'll say kind of financially stable while happy what you do. I think that's a good combination.
So what does Precise specifically do? If a firm of, let's just use a firm of 10 people come to you and they're struggling. They don't really know why they're struggling. Their friend recommended you. What do you do for them?
Yeah. So what we focus, again, we have a kind of a core services, and we have services that kind of surround, you know, our core services. So we really, first of all, I mean, from this project aspect, we have kind of our tools of how to help run the project from, you know, budget of hours, working with project managers, working with the owners, setting up budgets for every phase, you know, having projections for every month, and really managing that process, managing the pricing, managing the additional services aspect, which is usually a big issue for all firms, but especially for small firms, is the additional services aspect. And it's how you manage it is very key, because you know, the scope creep almost in every job. If you don't catch it fast enough, that money is basically gone. So we really are there to really kind of manage that aspect from the project to really the firm. So we set goals for the firm. We set budgets for expenses, how much we're supposed to pay on every expense line item. We have the knowledge of a benchmark of how much a firm as a percentage of revenue should pay for rent, how much they should pay for marketing. And we really tell the firms, where are you at in that scale? Are you overpaying? Are you underpaying? And if we're kind of setting up our cost, what do we need to bill on a monthly basis? How much we need to collect? You know, how many hours staff needs to put in? What's the utilization of the staff? So we really kind of take over that. That's kind of our main kind of focus, main tools. And we really work with, depends on the level. In smaller firms, sometimes the owner is the person we deal with the most. When it's a little bit of a bigger firm, there's project managers or associates that we're really kind of working with. And that's basically it. We again, from the small specific project to the firm, we make sure everything is run efficiently. When it's time to hire, again, we have our tools that shows us workload and projections for the next few months. So if somebody does need to hire, they can be comfortable hiring, because again, that's one of the biggest challenges that people have. And a lot of the firms, you know, there's a lot of stories about us that, you know, we came in, the firm grew like crazy. We didn't bring any work. I mean, we're not, we help with pricing, but we're not, you know, we're not dealing with the brand. We're not dealing with really the service aspect. That's really the architect. But many times firms are giving up on opportunities because they're afraid to grow. And we have countless situations when we came in and people said, we're very busy. We're saying no to jobs. And I, you know, my initial thing is, why are you saying no to jobs? Do you not want to grow? They're like, yeah, we want to grow, but we're too busy now. So I think when people see that they have the workload and they can really quantify it, it really helps them taking those steps to really grow and taking on more staff. Again, if they want to, not everybody wants to grow, but, you know, this business is all about capturing the opportunities. You know, expenses needs to be controlled. Obviously, we try to minimize expenses because that helps the bottom line, but we believe in controlling expenses, maximizing revenue, not, you know, minimizing expenses in the same revenue. It's just the way that the model works. It's usually easier to bring in revenue than to minimize your expenses, even though that's your gut feeling. And I totally understand that from the small to the big firms. It's, you know what you pay, right? You know, you feel that money going out. It's scarier to hire people and do all of that. And I think we help with that because we give numbers and it's not just based on your hunch. You know, I need more people. It's really based on numbers that you can quantify and you can see what your bottom line would look like in the next 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, I think there are many architects who want to grow and are afraid, right? It's just fear in their way. They don't know how, or they're afraid they're going to lose control. And then there's some other architects that just, they like being a sole practitioner, don't want to grow beyond that. You know, they like having a firm of two or three people. It's a, you know, tight little family, and they, you know, they get enough work to do what they do. But then I also hear the other side that they don't feel like they're making enough money, right? They're not earning enough personally, and they're not, the firm isn't earning enough to really be successful. They're just making enough to survive. In fact, many of them just find themselves in debt because they're not making enough. And they're also typically pretty careful with their money. So it's hard to reduce expenses because they're already, you know, they don't really spend money on things they don't need typically. And it really does come down to revenue, and more revenue means growth. You need to have more work, and more work means more people, and more people means it's a bigger firm. And so you need to go through that mental exercise in order to accept that this is what I need to do. So if we are in that situation where we are sort of struggling with the idea of growth, what do you recommend to somebody who's maybe it's a three-person firm? They know they need to grow. They're struggling to keep the bills paid, and they need to take that next step, but they just don't know how. What do you recommend to somebody like that?
Yeah. So first of all, again, just to reiterate what you said, there are firms that want to stay at a certain size, right? It does mean there are sacrifices in growing, right? I mean, you're basically, I don't want to say losing control, but, you know, and maybe again, from a three people firm to a six people firm, maybe you don't lose as much, but, you know, some of the firms we work with, you know, they grew from, you know, 10 to 50. It's different. You know, you're maybe as an owner, not as involved in all of the details. You may be not involved in all of the design. More importantly, the bulk of your time is going to be worked on business development, and not everybody wants to do that aspect. So first of all, you need, and I get this question a lot, like, what size should I be? And my initial question is, what do you want to do as an owner? What's your dream scenario? So if your dream scenario is to be a designer and just design a project that you choose, maybe you should stay at a certain size. If the financially, but you're right that there is a kind of a cap to how profitable you can be when you're working by yourself, working with one or more people. This is just how it works. Now, when you start growing, obviously, you know, with the structure, you can have staff that's producing and bringing more work. I'll say there's a lot of challenges in growing, but what you really need to do work really tells you how fast you can grow. If you can't bring the work, obviously you're not going to grow. But the important thing is really to if the opportunity comes in, and even if you say, okay, I can't do it by myself right now, I got to start hiring people. You need to take that, you know, that deep dive, and you need to see kind of how it works. You need to control your expenses, obviously, but you also need to take an opportunity to grow, because when you're at a certain size, stabilizing it might be a little bit easier because you know how much work you need to bring. That initial leap, you know, from going to three to six is sometimes a little bit tricky, and you need to you need the work, and you need to be prepared to delegate. That's not easy. It's not easy for me to delegate. I think it's easy for everybody to delegate, but you know, you need to again, and how comfortable in delegating you are is going to dictate also the pace that you grow. We worked with a firm that were literally, they had two employees, and in 4 months they became eight. But they were ready. You know, they were ready to take it. They just needed reassurance. I got the work. I can really kind of hire. But when you're growing, you're going to need to worry about expenses a little bit more. You're going to need to be worried about, you know, you have to have processes in place, like the billing process, a collection process. You know, when you're one person, you send a bill once in a while, because again, it's only you. When you grow, you got to get your firm a little bit more structured. What kind of an assistance you need really depends on the size you're going to grow to.
So I'm hearing we need to focus on our systems, right? Because we're going to have to understand how to get the work done. I'm hearing delegation. So we have to get good at delegating, and getting good at delegating is about being intentional about it and learning how to do it. Delegation is a skill. It's not something we just decide tomorrow we're going to start delegating, right? Because there's a big mental shift that has to happen that many of us at very small firms, you know, we've been doing it for so long this way. We have to, it's not just a matter of picking something that you do and give it to somebody else, right? There's more to delegation to make that successful. And then the other thing I'm hearing is financial management, that financial management is critical to understand how financial management works. So you can understand the money, right? Understand the cash flow of how money comes in, how money goes out, to understand how and when you're ready to hire, right? You said earlier that one of the things you do is to prepare the firm to be able to hire with confidence, right? And that's all financial management, right?
For sure. I mean, financial management is obviously key. And again, the level of financial management, you know, of 15 employee firm and three is not the same. Obviously, you don't need the same amount of service, but you do need to have the processes, you need to have the tools, and you need to know your numbers. Again, I think it's at the beginning, it's you know, even if you see the numbers, and again, we see it a lot, even if you see the numbers, you see you can grow, something deep inside is holding you back, especially if you did this for a long time. You know, obviously somebody that opened a business and 2 years later starts growing, it's sometimes easier, but a firm that's being one or two people or three people for 10 years, and all of a sudden they have the opportunities, sometimes it's harder. But you need to trust the numbers. And if that's what you want, I'm not saying everybody needs to do it. If that's what you want, is you need to take the plunge and you need to go for it. And again, always remember that focus on the revenue. Focus on, you know, am I pricing right? I'm getting the work. Additional services. You know, you need to remember that, you know, the work you're doing has value. And even though you love doing it, and they all do, right? All architects love their work and they love doing the work. It has value to the client. And if they're asking additional scope or they're asking additional things, it's, even if you're happy to do it, you need to also know to charge for it. And that becomes key when you have staff. Because, you know, if the staff is working on a project and not generating revenue, that becomes a little bit a scary situation.
Yeah. Do you ever get pushback when you start working with somebody and you say, okay, this is what needs to happen? And they're like, no, I don't want to do that.
I mean, for sure. I mean, I had one of, I mean, obviously the story, it's been, I guess, 5 years of working with this specific firm. And he told me, you know, the way I work is regardless of the fee in the contract, I provide the best service I can. Somebody's paying me 50 or 150, I'll literally provide the same service. And he told me, what I'm afraid about hiring you is that you guys will change the way I think. And my answer was, I don't know. I mean, I can't tell you for sure that I won't change how you think, but I want you to be aware. I want you to be aware that for a 50,000, you know, fee, you're spending 150. Now, if that job is that important for you for whatever reason, a resume, relationship with a client, make that decision. That's fine. I want you to be aware of the numbers. Sometimes when we don't know the numbers, it's easier for us to say, I'm servicing the same thing. But when you see it and when you know it, it becomes different. In general, I think, you know, we get pushback for specific things. But I think people that really work with us, they want to shift how they behave, how they work. Again, we're not making decisions for everybody. We're just basically saying, these are the numbers. This is the situation. This is our suggestion. They don't always go with the suggestion. I mean, we sometimes, you know, say, you know, to hire staff or to let staff go. And people will say, you know what, I understand the financial impact this is going to have on me, and I'm okay with it. And that's fine. So I think it's a collaborative, always decision-making. So, and if we get pushback, it's usually in the beginning. People need to get used to the idea of, you know, changing the way they think. But a lot of times the reason they come work with us is because they want to change it. But even if they know they want to change it, it's sometimes hard to really do. And it's kind of like you said with delegating, right? It's letting go. And letting go is not easy, especially if you've been doing this for a while. And we had, you know, we have firms that are doing this for 50, 60 years. And it's hard to change, you know, things that have been going on for so long. And we find the balance. We're not shifting, you know, firms all over the place. We're just, you know, I like to just make a few changes, a few tweaks really to make sure things, you know, run smoothly and more profitable.
Yeah. Yotam, If you could pick one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow, what would that be?
So I think, again, kind of as I said before, I think you need to know what to focus on. And I think it's, even though we spoke about business for the past, 30 minutes, really differentiate yourself. And the way you differentiate yourself is really your design and your service. The business aspect, people think that, successful firms are the ones that know business. Usually successful firms are the ones that are very talented. They know what they're doing. Their product, their service is A, good, and B, a little bit different, right? It has as kind of a unique type for it. And my suggestion is, even if you grow or when you grow, make sure you don't lose it. Make sure you don't lose, what made people fall in love with you, what made people go to you and bring that work. Make sure you keep that, moving forward. If you do, with some business assistance, you'll be successful.
Yeah. Yotam Kadem, Precise International is the company.
Yep.
Precise-int.com is the website. You can go there and learn all about Precise and everything that Yotam and his team are doing over there. Yotam, thank you very, very much. This has been an inspiring conversation. I appreciate you for coming and sharing your knowledge here today at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you so much. Really, it was a lot of fun. Thank you. And good luck, everybody.
Access the show notes or share this episode with a friend. The link is entrearchitect.com/episode377. That's entrearchitect.com/episode377. Entree Architect is proud to be a partner with the largest, most engaged AEC multimedia network on the planet, Gable Media. Have you been there? GableMedia.com, you should go check it out. We are curating thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. And check out Entree Architect Academy membership, ready to edit business resources, live monthly training webinars every month, a supportive architect community, and Simple Systems, our new business system program developed for small firm entrepreneur architects. We're building systems for you, and that library is growing. It's all waiting for you right now at Entree Architect Academy membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/join. entrearchitect.com/join. Learn all about the Entree Architect Academy membership. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, happy, safe, and secure. Thank you for listening today. Love, learn, share.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
you know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gehry. Visit glenngehry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.